You're listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today.
Welcome to PX Pulse. I'm Mitchell Warren, and today we're talking about the increasing complexity of trial design. We have more and better tools for preventing HIV than ever before, but so much more still needs to be done. Deborah Donnell is on the line with me today. She's a renowned HIV prevention research leader and statistician and part of the HIV Prevention Trials Network. Also called the HPTN, this network develops interventions aimed at preventing HIV. And today we're talking about two important trials known as HPTN 083 and HPTN 084. Both are comparing a long-acting injectable antiretroviral drug called cabotegravir to a proven prevention drug called Truvada, which is given as an oral pill. 083 and 084 are testing the same products for PrEP, the pill and the injection, but there are a bunch of new trial design terms, or at least new to HIV prevention research, that are important to understand as we think about these trials and about the future of prevention research. I wonder if you could help us explain the ideas behind those terms that are now being used of non-inferiority and superiority. What do we mean by these terms?
Okay. So in both of these trials, both the men's and the women's trial, everybody in the trial is being given an active drug product. They're either being given Truvada or they're being given this long-acting injectable trial. And so when you're comparing two active products, one question you could be asking is, do they work as well as each other? And that's called a non-inferiority trial. You could also ask the question, does one of them, like the injectable, work better than the other one, like Truvada? And that would be called a superiority trial. So clearly the difference is, in one, you're looking for similar infection rates amongst both of people on both drugs, and in the other, you're looking for fewer infections on one arm than the other.
That's incredibly helpful. And, you know, for most of us who've been in the HIV prevention research world for many years now, we've only really talked about placebo-controlled trials, where you want to see if a single active product is better than the placebo or dummy product. But the ideas originally behind these two new trials had different ideas. One was thought of as an open-label study, and the other what's called a double-dummy, double-blind. And I wonder if you could explain the two terms that are being bandied about quite a lot these days.
Sure. So in an open-label trial, it is what it says. It means that half of the people would be randomized to receive the pill, and they would be given only a pill, and then they would know that that pill is an active product. Similarly, they could be randomized to receive an injection, and they would receive only an injection, and they would know they were getting a cabotegravir injection. In a double-dummy, double-blind, what happens is everybody in the trial gets both a pill and an injection, and one of those is active and the other is placebo. So, you know, in the end, a person is only receiving Truvada or only receiving the cabotegravir injection, but the trial participant does not know whether the pill or the injection actually contains the drug. So that's a double-blind, double-dummy trial.
So originally the 083 study is this double-dummy, double-blind trial where everybody's getting two kinds of products. But the HPTN 084 design was originally meant to be an open-label study. What was the rationale or thinking behind doing two different kinds of studies with the exact same product?
Well, this is a kind of a complex argument, and I think the first thing is when we look at the drug Truvada, we have three randomized clinical trials, placebo-randomized clinical trials in the MSM, in the men, where we saw efficacy. We saw in each of those three trials that we saw lower infection rates in people who were given Truvada. But in the women, for the evidence in the women is different. In the women, we have four trials, two of which showed efficacy, and two of which showed no benefit at all for taking Truvada. We know from sort of post-trial analysis that only 25% of the women were actually taking the pills, and we believe that's the reason why we saw no efficacy. So when we're going forward in a trial comparing Truvada to cabotegravir, what we don't know at the beginning of the trial is whether the Truvada is actually going to reduce infections. And the reason we think it might not is because women may not take the pills very well. So when we're looking at doing a trial of Truvada compared to cabotegravir in women, it may be that the women don't take Truvada very well. And part of the reason that people are concerned about women not taking the pill very well is that if they don't know whether the pill or the injection is active, they may not take the pill very well. So there's a sort of a belief system about adherence. An open label trial is very simple. You are given a pill, you know that pill is what it says it is, and you can decide to take it, knowing that it will prevent HIV if you take it well. And that's not a very complex message for the pill. A double-blind, double-dummy trial is complicated because you're given both a pill and an injection, and you're told only one of them is working. So a concern about the double-blind, double-dummy trial is that it's complicated for the participant. It is also more expensive and complicated to run because every person has to get both an injection and a pill. And I think there was a concern that when doing these trials in sub-Saharan Africa, that if we could avoid having to give everybody both products, it would be less complicated and less costly. So that was a sort of a second reason. A third reason is that there is a concern from some of the work that's been done around the issue of poor adherence in the trials, in the previous trials, that part of why women didn't take the pill very well was the complexity around a blinded product, around given a pill where it may or may not actually contain a drug. So there was a hypothesis, there was this theory that if women were given an open label pill, so a pill where they knew it contained the drug, that they may take it better and adherence might be higher for the Truvada arm in an open label trial. Whereas in a blinded trial, perhaps the adherence wouldn't be as good. I have to say we don't have any evidence about whether that would actually be true, but it was sort of felt that if we wanted to see high adherence to the pill, we may have a better shot at that if it was an open label trial.
That's so helpful. And I think what's so interesting is you provided that great explanation. You talked a lot about beliefs and hypotheses and assumptions about the products and the adherence to those products. But in all of these trial design discussions, as much as we want evidence-based decision-making, it's pretty clear now that we have to operate with a lot of assumptions as we try to figure this out. So as the open label design for 084 was unfolding, the sponsors working with the regulators decided not to do it that way, but to do it like HPTN-083 using the double dummy, double blind design. I wonder if you can speak at all about the rationale behind that shift in the decision and what might be gained or lost with that change in trial design.
Both are excellent questions. So the rationale for, I think there are, as I understand it, there are two main reasons why we have switched to a double-blind, double-dummy. One of them is a discomfort with having the women's trial different from the men's trial. So, you know, we are testing exactly the same product in two completely different populations, and there was a feeling that doing two different trials in two different populations was an uncomfortable place to be. But I think that is sort of one reason. Probably the more prevailing reason, however, really had to do with the classic approach, which is when we're testing new drugs, the classic approach is really to do a blinded trial. It is considered to be the highest standard of trial, highest standard of evidence if it's done in a blinded trial. And the advantage that blinding has is that essentially, knowledge of which arm you're in could change people's behavior. And so both the FDA and the South African Medical Research Council strongly preferred that we do a double-blind trial. So ultimately, that was what the team decided to do.
You know, this is obviously a series of decisions and conversations that reflect a growing complexity in the field because we have a proven new intervention in oral PrEP. I wonder, if you look beyond 083 and 084, which is studying one drug, injectable cabotegravir, look beyond, and I wonder what the landscape might be in your mind of an increasingly innovative and exciting scientific pipeline. What should we be paying the most attention to, and how should we be getting ready for the future?
Oh, Mitchell, that's a very hard question. Some part of me says that I would like to say what we're looking forward to is a place where we have such good products in place that we don't need to continue doing these large clinical trials. That's kind of a positive, and I don't know whether to be worried about this or not. It's hard to see. If we come up with like really effective injection products, it's a little bit hard to see how we will ever develop an HIV vaccine. So that is one thing that concerns me. But in terms of like doing the trials that we're doing right at the moment, it's really important to me personally anyway to maintain a conversation with the communities where these trials are going on so that people can really understand what we're doing and how we're trying to advance HIV prevention to really do something about the epidemic.
Deb, that is actually so beautifully said. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today. I'm counting on so many more conversations with you over the weeks and months and years ahead as more and more information rolls out from these trials and from the much larger universe in which we all are working, and as we all begin together to chart some clear paths forward.
Thank you very much, Mitchell.
You've been listening to PX Pulse, a regular podcast bringing you fresh voices on critical issues facing HIV prevention research today.